So the guitar only has three strings. It's a small size guitar. Everything is in one key, and everything is marked up with decals and colors. And they learn how to read standard notation, but it's all with colors. And they only have to learn seven notes. And everything's unison playing. And so it's very simple. It's almost shockingly simple, but it needs to be that way.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, and welcome back to Season 1, 2018 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. You're listening to episode number 117, that's Series 1, Season 1 I should say, Episode 1 of 2018. And if you're one of my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community members, a very special welcome to you. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and if this is your first time here, then thank you so much for tuning in. I really do hope that you enjoy the conversation that we have today, and that you, of course, go and tell all your piano teaching friends about it. For those of you who have been listening for a while, thanks again for choosing to spend time with me. I certainly don't take for granted that you're all very busy people and have lots of other things you could be listening to. So thanks again for tuning in. The Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, of course, is the place where you can get weekly inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. Today's show notes and full transcript are available as usual if you head to timtopham.com/episode117. We're kicking off Season 1, 2018 with a very special guest talking about creating preschool music programs. And I know that many teachers are interested in teaching younger students, younger than the sort of average starting age of probably 7 or 8, but perhaps don't know where to go. And there are a number of courses that you can purchase or license, but today's guest has actually built his own, and he's actually going to share some of the ideas and strategies around how he did that in case that is something that interests you as well. My guest today is a music school owner who used to turn away 4 to 6 year olds who wanted to learn how to play an instrument in his studio. This inspired him to develop and license rock band programs that allow a whole new age group to participate in the ensemble experience and, of course, feed into the rest of his studio offerings. So, Dave Simon, welcome to the show.
Great. Well, thank you. And thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I've been following what you've been up to online for a little while now. So it's good to finally meet and have a proper chat and also share some ideas with some other teachers. You're doing some great things.
Thank you.
Now, before we jump in today, let's get a little bit of context to what you're actually up to these days. Where are you based? How many students are you looking after? What instruments are being taught? Those kinds of things.
So I'm based in St. Louis, Missouri, here in the States. And I have 260 students. I've been around for 14 years. My whole school was launched on this whole idea of group programming, which has really paid off well over the years.
And what's your instrument?
You know, no one ever guesses this, but I'm a bass player.
Oh, all right. I thought you might have been a drummer, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, usually now people think guitar, piano. I like drummers. The drummers are very cool, so I'll take it. But yeah, I'm a bass player, and to answer your other question, you know, we teach guitar, drums, piano, bass, and voice, kind of everything that you would find in a rock band.
Right. Okay. So all in one studio location with multiple rooms.
Correct.
Therefore, yep. Great. So we've got lots of people listening who I know are thinking about expanding their studio in the future by potentially hiring other teachers, offering summer camps, potentially expanding to other locations. So I'd like to find out a little bit more about your own growth journey. So can you take us back to when you first started teaching? Did you begin as a bass teacher one-on-one in a room with students? And then how did you then decide it was time to go, oh, actually, I need a piano teacher now, and then let's do some drums as well?
Yeah, I did, you know, start like that. I was, you know, in the early 90s, I was living in New York City teaching bass guitar out of my apartment, which in 2018, that probably wouldn't go over so well. But, you know, and I had about 10 students, and I, you know, was teaching for a while, and then I hit 30 and decided, okay, I'm like done with music, I got to get a real job. I got a real job. And it just kept, you know, nagging at me that I was out of music. And so I came up with this idea of, you know, starting a school that was focused on rock bands. This is prior to School of Rock coming out. So it really was just an experiment. So I'd been out of teaching for, maybe 5 or 8 years. And I started with 6 kids in my school. And then it just got to a point where I had enough where I had to decide whether it's time to quit my job or and pursue the school or quit the school. And I went for it. And here I am 14 years later.
Wow. So you actually stopped teaching for a while and did another full-time job. What was your other full-time job?
I got into IT. I was living in San Francisco at that point during the whole IT and internet explosion around 2000. And there was so much work to be had. And it was pretty tempting, but I also realized, you know, once you're a musician, it's a hard thing to actually let go of.
Right. And so you decided to, what was the little trigger that made you start again with those 6 kids?
So here's what's funny is that I went to a career counselor and I did this whole like process of questions. And it was like a 16-hour process. And at the very end, she said, well, I've concluded that you need to go into music education. I'm like, that's exactly what I'm trying to get out of.
Interesting.
But, you know, to be digging a little bit deeper, I grew up, or in college, I was a jazz studies major. And what I loved about that was that we had a combo leader who wasn't, you know, playing with us and had all his ears and attention on the group. I was also a rock and roller at the time. And I felt like that as a rock and roller, it would be so beneficial to have an older, more experienced person kind of playing that role of a conductor or a leader. And that doesn't exist in the rock world. Mm. And so I thought, well, maybe I could just put something together where young kids are working with me and I can be their mentor. Cause I had that in jazz. I had it in classical, but in rock and roll, it's just you and your buddies in a garage.
Right. And where did you start with those 6 kids?
I just rented a basement of a music store.
Right. Okay. And how did you find those kids originally?
I walked around town and just put up posters and said, open house, Dave Simon's Rock School. And I had no idea what that was going to even mean. So people showed up, you know, about 10 people showed up to the open house and I signed up 6. And then, away I went. And about a year later, I had 65 kids. The movie School of Rock came out, which was a huge, game changer for me. And
I noticed you mentioned that before. That did actually have an impact, did it?
Well, I went, the minute I heard about it, I emailed all the local media and said, hey, we've got our own School of Rock here in St. Louis. Kind of pitched to
clever.
Them.
Yeah.
Right. And so, this was like a great moment. I quit my corporate job. I had my, maybe 10, 15 students. And I was waiting tables again. You know, here I was in like my mid to late 30s waiting tables. And my boss comes to me and holds up the cover of the local newspaper with my picture on it. And he's like, so when are you giving me my 2 weeks notice? And about 3 days later, I gave her my 2 week notice because everybody was calling. They wanted to be a part of this, rock school thing.
Wow, that's some clever PR and some lucky timing too, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So when it came to, so you had these 6 kids. So sorry, let's just go back. The open house, just to get the language right, that's like where you just say, hey, anyone come along and we're going to jam and you can have a look at the what I'm doing sort of thing for free?
No, so I had an open house and I just shared my vision of what I wanted the school to be. And at that point I was going to be the teacher.
Yep.
And cause I was the only employee.
And that was a free event that any parent or child could come along to.
Right. But there was no playing and I knew nothing about business. And I have this very vivid memory of the people there waving, like kind of holding up their checkbooks going, how much is it?
Oh,
and I hadn't even thought about that. Wow, and so I just made up a price right on the spot.
Right. Okay. And so those, that core of six, so they were kids. What kind of age were those kids?
You know, early teens, late teens.
Yep.
Early teens, kind of preteen as well.
Yep. So they signed up and you began teaching weekly group rock classes with all of them on different instruments in one room.
Right. And then I would drive to their houses for their private lessons.
Wow. Okay. So each week they would have one group class jamming together in the room with you conducting effectively, and then you'd go to their house as well.
Right. Once I got to like, you know, eight or so kids, I split them into two groups and I just kept building more and more groups. And for an additional price, I would come to their home.
Right. Okay. And,
now, what was nice is that the music store had people renting rooms that were teaching lessons. So I was getting a lot of their students. So a lot of them were still staying with their private instructors. So it really worked out well.
Oh, okay. So above you in the main music school or wherever that was, there was kids having private lessons who were hearing some cool music going on in the basement and going, well, hey, maybe I could join in that.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, that's a very clever. And as you kind of admit, it's fortuitous, I guess, and kind of lucky that it's kind of worked out that way. And you obviously timed things really, really well. How did you go with the different instruments? Were you able to teach each instrument at a basic level?
Yeah, you know, I was always playing in bands. I was the kid who band practice was always at my house, so I was always messing around on all the different instruments. And I went through different stages of my life where I'd spend a few years focusing on drums or guitar. So I felt comfortable and confident with a complete beginner or intermediate level kid on any of those instruments. I did not feel confident or comfortable when I was dealing with more advanced level kids. And I'm a bass player. So it's not like if I was a guitar player, that would have been much more beneficial. You know,
right.
I mean, I maybe had two or three bass players in the school at the time.
Yeah. So you were competent enough to get kids started on keys, drums, bass, and guitar. That were your primary rock instruments?
Right. But I knew what those instruments were supposed to sound like. And I knew how to guide those kids. I just, as long as they didn't say to me, well, let me hear you play it, I was okay.
Right, okay. And when they rocked up that first group of eight, did you say, all right, well, first group of six, did you sort of go, okay, well, Simon, you're on the drums and Julie, you're on the bass? Or did they get to pick? Or did they keep swapping?
No, they specifically signed up. They came into the program with their instrument picked out. And then if I didn't have an opening for drums, it was too bad. The kid, I would lose a student.
Well, they'd go on a wait list, I guess.
Right.
Yep. So it's such an interesting story. I love hearing how people start these things. And it really sounds like you didn't quite know what you were doing or what you were trying to build by your own admission. And look what's happened now.
I had a vision of what it ultimately would look like. And I just focused on that endpoint, even when I pitched it at the open house.
Right. Great. And so let's talk about the building of the studio. So how did you know when to hire other teachers and how did you get the right people?
Well, first of all, the school maxed out. I only have so much time to teach. We all do who teach. We're limited. And so as I started kind of reaching that full capacity point, I had some really tough questions to ask myself. Like, well, you know, do I raise my prices? What do I do now? And so I just started hiring people, but then I didn't have any criteria as to what I was looking for. So there was a lot of hiring and firing and trial and error. And then over the years, I kind of began to get a sense of what my typical employee looks like in terms of not only musical background, but personality and an ability to connect and tell a story, which I think for educators, your storytelling skills and your ability to connect, I value that more than your musical abilities.
Wow. Now that's a pretty big call because most people would put the music ability way above anything else. Why is the storytelling so important? The ability to tell stories so important to you?
Because when you're telling a story, you're pulling your student in to the moment. With kids, the minute you start talking, they start zoning out. And I've learned I never explain things to kids. I just want them to experience it and then say, okay, what you had just experienced is this thing. And then I start putting language to it. But how you present something, if there's a way to put it in some framework of a story, especially with a group, of kids, out of nowhere, a lot of the times I'll go, okay, who here saw the new Star Wars movie? It has nothing to do with what's happening in the class, but it's my way of pulling them in and focusing on me. A 30-second conversation about The Last Jedi, and then I transition back into music talk.
Right, yeah. And I'm a big fan of that as well. It's a great rapport-building method with any right. student. Yeah, finding that common ground and having a chat about things. All right, so you started hiring people. So these were teachers who could teach, like you did, a number of kids in a room and multiple instruments to a basic level.
Initially, I then became the band guy, and they became private instructors. I gave them very little guidance. Again, I was trying to create structure within a world that lacks structure, the world of rock and roll, which is a real, it's a street culture. Kids just kind of learn on the fly, and there's something beautiful about that. But I figured I could speed up the process of musical development for kids if I could give them a real framework. So I initially wrote all of my teaching curriculum for each instrument, because I remember going to Borders Books and looking for music books to teach rock and roll. They're teaching songs, but they weren't teaching the natural progression that I felt like students needed to go through. So I just started writing books for each instrument. And then, it took about a year or two to get to that point. And then my teacher started teaching with that.
Right. Okay. So you actually created the first curriculum material that you created was actually for instruments, individual instruments. And then formed into what you've now got, which we'll talk about in a moment, which is your kids' rock program and subsequent programs, which is what other teachers can now use if they're interested in doing the same thing. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, one other question just about teaching. Now that you've got more structure around how you hire people and what you're looking for, how do you go about making sure that your teachers are teaching the way that you want and that suits your vision for the studio?
Great question. Well, before I hire somebody, I ask a parent to come in to take a free lesson with this prospective hire. And they teach them the lesson. And then I have a series of questions to ask the parent. And from that experience, and by the time I've reached that point with a prospective instructor, they've gone through at least two or three in interviews.
Right.
So I really take my time with it, because this instructor, I'm going to have to be living with this person. They're going to have to be living with me for hopefully a few years. And it's really the only time in the relationship, sort of during this courtship, that you can get out of it or you cannot hire them. And there aren't consequences. Once you hire them, there's consequences if it doesn't work out. So I really try to be very thorough. A big thing that I do is I have my instructors observe the other teachers, and they have a series of questions that they answer about the other teacher. So really try my staff learning from each other.
Like what kind of questions are they looking to answer?
It might be questions about how does the teacher structure the lesson? How do they troubleshoot problems? Are they playing most of the time? Or no, it's questions about how much time is spent playing and how much time is spent talking and instructing.
Yeah.
And then I also say, is there anything that the instructor does that you feel that you could incorporate into your own teaching? And that's an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And so, and just going back, you actually get them to teach a lesson to a parent, not a child. Is that right?
Correct.
Why not a child?
Because a child, it would be hard, I feel, to ask. I mean, that's a great question. I feel like it would be hard to get the information that I need from a child. Because I need critical information. And I need the good and the bad and the ugly. And I think for a kid, that could be a lot of pressure.
I see. Yeah, so it's more about you're asking the person who's receiving the lesson to give you feedback. It's not just about you observing how that teacher is interacting with the student and what they're right. doing. Got it.
And I think this also brings up the bigger question of who is our real customer? Is it the parent or is it the child? And there's a real challenge there. And one question I always ask the parent is, if you were looking to place your child in or another child in my studio, how would you be okay with this person teaching your child? And that answer is pretty much what helps me make my final decision.
Yeah, a really interesting approach. I haven't heard of it done in that way before. So I'm sure people who are listening, who are interested in this and who are hiring people or considering it, will definitely take some ideas away from that. So thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
All right. So you started creating resources, these books on specific instruments and how you think they should be taught to introduce the rock kind of style playing. Correct me if any of this is wrong. I'm just kind of summarizing. And then eventually you wanted to be able to hand over your own job, I'm guessing, which is you were the band guy. So you started creating material around how you actually did that.
Right. And I've learned with music instructors, first of all of us are very passionate about music. And I have noticed that if you give music instructors too much guidance, if the framework's too tight, they can push back. So I try to give them a very general framework. And I try to empower them and say, look, you teach your way, but be sure to hit on these points. And those points, I think any music educator would feel comfortable with.
Right. Oh, it's very much aligned with my own views on that. So when I produce materials, I always call it a framework rather than a method. Here's a structure, a scaffold around which you can build your own teaching. Use bits of it. Don't use this bit. Align it. Add in stuff. It's designed as a creative resource, I guess, for how you can go about doing things. So yeah, that aligns really well with my own approach. So let's talk about your program. It's called Kids Rock. Well, that's the first one I gather you started. Tell us what kind of ages it's for, what it does, and what teachers might be interested in it.
So Kids Rock is for ages 4 to 7, and it's reversed the music education process by making Rock Band the first exposure to playing an instrument, as opposed to private lessons. Private lessons is the ultimate destination. And well, how do you get a four-year-old to play in a rock band? They can't even play the guitar. Like, what are you doing? It's a crazy proposition, but I made it work by making the music. All the music is written for this age group, and it's written so that they can come in day one and play. And it's more about building a child's sense of their own musical abilities so that they feel good about themselves and that they perceive music as fun. And Kids Rock came about because I ultimately set an age minimum in my studio, which created a problem for me. And I was turning away a lot of students.
What was your age minimum?
It was different for every instrument. Piano, I said 5. Drums and guitar, I said 7. And I was torn as a business owner. Do I take that 4 or 5-year-old right away, get money right away, but run the risk of turning them off to playing music, run the risk of them perceiving it to be too hard and too much of a challenge? Do I say, no, don't come to me? Or do I accept that money in the moment? And my first decision was, okay, I'm going to just set these age minimums because I really felt like I didn't have the ability to teach a 5-year-old to do well on drums or guitar successfully. And I had minimal success with piano. I mean, I found some method books that I think were good, but I had a hard time with retention with this younger age group. I had much better retention with my 9 to 13-year-olds. So, but then the recession hit, and here I was turning away students left and right. And I said, I got to do something about this. So I let students in this age group come to me for free so I could experiment in a group setting what could be done. And I put Kids Rock together during that year.
Right. And so the goal of Kids Rock is to get preschool age, so ages 4 to 7 kids,
yeah,
playing together in a band as their first experience of music.
Right.
Right.
How is that possible?
Well, yeah, I'm picturing a 4-year-old holding a full-size guitar, and that's going to be way bigger than them, right?
Everything. So I had to look at every component of what goes on in an ensemble setting and bring it down to their level. So the guitar only has 3 strings. It's a small size guitar. Everything is in one key, and everything is marked up with decals and colors. And they learn how to read standard notation, but it's all with colors. And they only have to learn 7 notes. And everything's unison playing. And so it's very simple. It's almost shockingly simple, but it needs to be that way.
Right.
It's all about giving kids access to the ensemble experience, letting them experience day one, the end result, which is playing in a rock band in front of a cheering audience. That will change a kid's life.
Yeah, and having wins along the way, right? And quick wins too.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm picturing this room. You've got a program now where you know how to teach these kids, let's say 4 or 5-year-olds. Each of them are on a different instrument. They're jamming away. Are they playing music that they know, like common riffs and things?
No. Everything, even the music was written for the program. So, for example, for the 4 and 5-year-olds, the chords change every 2 measures. And then when the chord changes, it takes kids sometimes 6 beats to get to that next chord.
Right.
So the chord change happens, and it sounds a little bit like a bit of a roller coaster. The band comes together, and then, boom, off to another chord. And then as the kids get older, the rate of chord changes picks up, and the concept of a chorus is introduced to the music. The little kids are only playing an 8-measure pattern that repeats, and that's the whole song.
Right. And are they playing along to a backing track to kind of fill it out a bit and keep them in time?
No, the instructor plays along either on piano or guitar, but in concert, I go to my older students, and have older as in maybe 9 or 10, and they help out and they play along with the kids.
Right. So that's great. I build a little bit of mentoring.
Yes. I build a band within a band.
Yeah. Nice. And so I think you said that you launched a beta version of this first to test it out. How did that work out?
So, I had a local competitor who was, 10 miles, 15 miles away. It wasn't a direct competitor, friendly with the guy. And he was interested in the program, and he wanted me to put one of my employees on site to teach it. And I said, why don't you run the program and I'll teach you how. And I worked closely with him for about a year and just, because now it's like, okay, now I got to get this thing in a box with a little pretty bow on it so that he can open it and run his own version of it. And I realized, wait, I'm onto something here. Maybe I'm offering something that can be helpful to other music instructors and allow them to not only feel good about this age group, but maximize their profits by having, 6 kids in a band. And it kind of just took off from there. And I started, taking it nationally, and then I got into Canada and then the UK. And so here we go.
Fantastic. And so do teachers who are interested in this have to buy the instruments as well through you or somewhere else? How does that work?
So I provide 2 guitars come with the program. I have an agreement there's a local guitar manufacturer who builds guitars for the program, and all they need is a junior size drum set, and any $90 keyboard will work for the program.
Right. And so I gather this could be used by teachers as an alternative to those more traditional elementary programs like Kitty Keys and Music Garden, things like that. How much, so, and I know there might maybe teachers listening going, I really want to do something with preschool, but I want to do something that's a little bit different. So they may well be quite interested in this. How much of an impact has opening up this age level with this group action and this activity had on things like your retention the student skills when they move up to the next level, and then of course your bottom line.
Right, great question. So my retention rates have really improved dramatically at the same. Think of Kids Rock as like soccer. I'm sorry, football. We're dealing with Australia here. Think of it as like football for 5-year-olds. Any kid can do it. Any kid can join the team. But what percentage of those kids playing football at 5 are going to be playing it when they're 10? Okay, it's a limited percentage. Whereas before going into private lessons, there was a significant barrier to entry. You got to buy a piano, you got to buy books, you got to do all these things. Whereas Kids Rock, any kid can do it. So the kid who's really connecting with music and is falling in love with it, not only are they going to stay with your program, but they're going to grow up with your school. So you had talked about retention. What's interesting is that the kids who graduate from Kids Rock, they stay with me for much longer than kids that are coming in at maybe 8 that aren't coming from Kids Rock, because the Kids Rockers do have some developed fine motor skills that your typical 8-year-old doesn't have. And more importantly, they're confident in their abilities, because they're 7 or 8 and they've already played about 6 concerts in front of 100 people. So they're just, music's been a part of their life for a couple of years.
Mm. And then the impact on the bottom line, obviously it's been positive because you've opened up an area that you weren't actually catering for before.
Right. I mean, now it's interesting. 20% of my revenues are coming from Kids Rock. But that, so I'm getting new money today, but I would say 40 to 50% of my studio are Kids Rock graduates. So from a marketing standpoint, it's a funnel. I'm not having to spend so much on advertising. And my competitors are not interested in this age group. They don't want 4-year-olds, you know, unless they're going to put them in some like Kiddie Keys or, you know, Kinder Music. You know, the guitar teachers in my area, they don't want 4-year-olds in guitar lessons. School of Rock doesn't want them. But I'll take, not only will I take them, I'll keep them.
Right. Yeah, well, you've absolutely cornered another whole area of the market, which is obviously being underserved, and created something really special for them. So, congratulations. It sounds like a great program. And I understand that you've now subsequently, after creating that and having such success with the preschoolers, you've then realized, well, actually, now I need something for the preteens and then something for the next group. So you've actually got a series of programs now, haven't you?
Right, because it came, first of all, Kids Rock created a new problem for me. Because now I've got these 6 and 7-year-olds loving being in a rock band. And then I was saying, okay, you're too old for Kids Rock. Go into piano lessons now. Okay, but I want to be with the band. Sorry. You're like, I don't have anything for you. So I extended Kids Rock with a whole new program called Junior Rockers that takes the philosophy of day one, you're in a rock band. And what's happened for me is now if somebody calls up to my studio with an 8 or 9-year-old and they want to take piano lessons, I say, look, let me tell you about Junior Rockers and let me tell you what this can do for your child. And then you pick for yourself. You know, do you think Junior Rockers is the best fit or private lessons? I'd say 80% go right into Junior Rockers and then they upgrade to private lessons.
Right.
So private lessons is in my studio. It's really for the kids that have convince themselves that they want to really grow as a musician and kind of hone those skills.
Yep. And it's, as you say, it's a great funnel. You know, you get them in the door at the start and then they can move up through the sequence of activities onto private lessons potentially if they want to. Just at the beginning of their time with you in the Kids Rock program, what's the expectation with practice?
None.
Right.
They don't think. There's nothing they buy. They don't do it at home. It only happens in the class. It's, let's take everything that people love about music. Let's maximize it and amplify it. Let's take the things that people struggle with and let's minimize those things. Practice, I think, is for people that are really hungry to grow as musicians. I do think, look, you have to practice to develop those core skills. It's not going to happen if you're not doing it. But practice is for the kid who says, okay, music is for me. And in junior rockers, that's where the practicing starts to kick in. But they're not with a private teacher yet. Now there's positive peer pressure of, I got to keep up with my band. I got to practice. They're not practicing. Like when I was a kid, I had this like scary Russian, you know, old country bass teacher. And I practiced because I was afraid of him. I didn't practice because I loved what he was teaching me. But and there's something to be said for his approach. But, you know, it's 2018 and it's a different world. And I want kids to practice because it's therapeutic for them. It's allowing them to take a break from the pressures of school. And my ultimate hope is that they'll put down their cell phone and the video game and go to the piano for therapeutic.
Wouldn't that be great? Yes, absolutely. I think everyone will be nodding their heads as they listen. I actually think this at that young age is actually quite a clever approach because you mentioned football for five-year-olds before, you know, the analogy to sports teams. And one of the biggest differences between what we try and offer for young students and what they get in soccer and ballet and dance and karate and all those things, which we're often competing with, is that they don't have to practice any of those things. Well, maybe karate, but, you know, they might kick a soccer ball around, but really all the action happens when they're at their training. And maybe they actually have three of those a week or two of them, whatever it is. So you've almost taken a leaf out of sport in that regard and created a program where kids come and do it when they're there. And then they come back the next week and they do it some more and they have fun, they enjoy it. Maybe they'll go and tinker on the weekend, they'll kick a soccer ball around with their family or something like that. And then they start loving it, enjoying it, and start thinking, well, maybe I could learn a bit more about this. And that's where the private lessons come in.
Let's go back to your football analogy. What if your kid's really thriving on the football team and really is getting serious about it? Okay, you might get that kid a private coach to start working on fine-tuning those skills. And that's exactly what our approach is. Private lessons are about mentorship and fine-tuning and making significant growth. None of that can happen until the kid believes that they have musical abilities and that they love it. And I want to say one more thing about the football analogy. If you have two boys that are next-door neighbors, and they're on the same football team. And one boy is back there every day kicking the ball in the backyard against the wall. And another boy isn't ever doing it. Both parents will keep their kids on the team. The parent with the child who isn't practicing, the parent won't say, well, you know, he's not practicing in the backyard like my neighbor. Therefore, I'm pulling him out of the team. Just today, I had a parent say to me, I'm pulling my girls out of lessons because they don't practice. And that, I think I'm determined to fix that.
Mm.
You know, it's like, I don't think not practicing is not an excuse to pull your kid out of music.
Mm. Interesting. Well, I mean, we could go down the old practice discussion rabbit hole very quickly. So I'm going to keep moving because I have a feeling there will be some people listening out there who potentially have created some of their own products and ideas around teaching, and maybe they would be interested in doing what you've done and packaging it up, putting that bow on it, as you say, and licensing it or to other people or selling it. Have you got any advice to teachers who would be interested in this idea?
The first thing I think anyone needs to do if they're thinking of branching out is running their program or taking their product that they've developed and have someone else teach it, because they ultimately need to remove themselves 100% out of the equation. But there's so many details that they're not going to be able to think of just on their own. They got to get a teacher in there and watch the teacher struggle and then realize, I haven't articulated that for them. I need to map that out. Next step is to find somebody out of your location, maybe a competitor or a friend in a different city, to run the program. And you know what? Maybe give it to them for free and just work with them. I think the key thing is to identify what is it that needs to be mapped out. It has nothing to do with the musical component, because you've already done the hard work and developed the musical component. Now you've got to articulate how to teach this thing. And my operations manual is it's to a point now where it's all like a script. Somebody could read it as a script. Nobody ever teaches that way, but it's just trying to come up with every potential teaching scenario that comes up and anticipate it and give your partners the tools to succeed with your program.
Great advice. And how does your licensing system work if teachers are interested in this program?
So the way it works is it's a monthly, it's like a monthly subscription. They commit for a year. I give them an operations manual. I give them song books, recordings, training videos and audio. It's everything that they need to do to succeed. And more importantly, I give them my cell phone number so they can call me when they have problems, because their problems are going to, and my solutions I help them come up with are going to go into my operations manual. You know, so I'm always learning from my licensees. But it really allows them to get my program and just, you know, kind of come out of the box with it, with everything working. Because I want them to focus on their business and not focused on trying to develop, you know, their own program, which is going to take years to do.
Right.
You know, for a month, for a low monthly subscription, it's worth it to license a program. If someone came to me with my program 5 years ago, I would have licensed it in a heartbeat, because right. it would have solved for me a problem that I really need solved.
And look, I want people listening to really take note of what Dave has said, because it's something we can all learn from, this idea that we feel like we have to do every single thing in our studios, particularly as we grow and get bigger and bigger, and particularly if you've hired other teachers to help you. You should not be doing every single thing. Unless you are a graphic designer and you have time for it, don't be designing every image and every logo. Unless you are a specialist in Facebook advertising, then you know, by all means, give it a shot, learn how it works, but maybe hiring someone is a better way to go. You've got to make sure that the cost versus the benefit of what you're doing with your time is going to be giving you the most benefit. And so I'm right with you there, Dave, when it comes to these kinds of things, you know. And don't reinvent the wheel if there's something out there. Yes, you might be spending some money, but you're going to be saving a whole lot of time and hassle potentially with something that you know is guaranteed that will work. Whereas maybe your other idea has no guarantee. So that's my thinking on it anyway.
I think that's great. That's really great.
So, Dave, thank you so much for your time today. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention in regard to what you've been able to achieve or your programs?
No, I think the thing that I always want to encourage people to do is, for their own studios, is to identify how they can maximize their growth. And what you're saying about time is so crucial. I think so many studio owners and instructors get bogged down in not using their time well. And my programs are really designed to help them with that. Next year, I'm coming out with a summer camp that combines all of my programs together. And I know summer camp's a hot issue. Surviving in the summer, at least here in the States, is a real challenge. And summer camp has been my key to survival.
I've had a lot of interviews with people about summer camps, and we've had quite a few articles written about it. So great to know that you've got something on offer there too, or will have. So if that's of interest to you, then look Dave up. So you can find out more about Dave's own music school, his music studio, at dsrockschool.com. And there's more about Dave Simon himself and his licensing and his programs at davesimonsmusic.com, davesimonsmusic.com. He's got a blog and lots of articles for teachers looking to expand their businesses. I really like what you've done over there, Dave. Thank you very much for your time today. Hopefully we'll be able to meet one day properly in person.
Yeah. And if we meet, it's going to be in Australia for sure.
All right. You're welcome down under anytime, mate. Great to hang out with you, and keep up the fantastic work you're doing.
Great. Thanks. Same to you. Keep it strong.
See ya.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, everyone, I do hope you enjoyed my interview with Dave Simon. A few reminders for you. Music Expo in London is on this time in 2 weeks. It's on the 22nd and 23rd of January. It's a completely free event for music and drama teachers in London. It's at London Olympia. So I'm actually going to be speaking at that event on the Friday at 10:15 in the Rock, Pop and Tech Theatre. It's going to be pretty cool. We're talking about four-chord pop composing, a creative music lesson for millennials. That's the official title. It's 45 minutes worth, and interestingly enough, it's going to be the first time I've presented in a theatre with headsets on. So it's because it's in a kind of semi-open space in the expo room, everyone's going to have headsets on. I'm going to have a headset on, and that's how you're going to hear what I'm playing and what I'm talking about. It's going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to it. So that's on the 22nd, 23rd of February. I do hope that if you're in London, you make some time to come along to that. And if you do, of course, make sure you come and say hi after my event or at some stage anyway. And as you are a podcast listener and many of you are my Inner Circle members, then make sure you find out about the meetup. We're going to have some meetup drinks at a fantastic bar called The Anthologist on the Monday night before the event. To find out more about that, head to timtopham.com/meetup. Next week in episode 2 of season 1, we've got the first of our 2018 composer spotlights with a person you'll know well and who is also new to the podcast. We'll be discussing what he calls the crisis in creativity. We'll have a chat about whether competitions are good for composition students and the difference between improvising and composing and how you can encourage both of these pursuits in your students in just about every lesson. That's next week, but for now, I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.